Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is prime time on Money FM 89.3. I'm Rachel Kelly. Many things have changed in the 5 months since the world came to know of SARS-CoV-2, the long name for the tiny virus that's had an outsized impact on economies and societies. And there may be more surprises or shocks to come. Scientists, the detectives of the microbial world, are still learning more about the virus, and we're joined by Audrey Tan, science and environment correspondent at The Straits Times, to find out the latest. Audrey, thanks for joining us. Could you give us a quick update on how our understanding of the virus has evolved?
Yes, sure. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, we first heard about this virus about 5 months ago when people with symptoms started emerging from a wildlife market in China. And from there, the scientific knowledge about this virus has changed a lot over time. I would say in three broad categories. So one would be the basic biology of the virus, how it affects humans, and lastly, how to tackle it. And all of this, there's still plenty of gaps in each of these areas, and they all build on each other, like knowledge from one would feed into how another scientist looks at the virus. So things like the basic biology of the virus. On January 12th, Chinese scientists uploaded the genome of this virus on a public database, and that was a very important clue for scientists around the world. And one important piece of information that we could get from that was how it relates to other viruses. So a genome of an organism is a unique identifier. So each virus, each species of virus would have its own unique genome, and it can tell scientists how they are all related to each other. So from this, from the genome, it's clear that this virus, SARS-CoV-2, is linked to the same SARS virus that caused the outbreak in 2003.
And that's what I was just going to ask you. You know, it's from the same family as SARS, but at the same time, this is much more fatal. So what's the difference?
Yeah, so that's a big question that scientists still want to answer. For SARS in 2003, I think death toll was about 800 people. And right now, for this coronavirus, the death toll has far surpassed that. I think it's in 300,000 deaths and counting. So that is one big unknown, and scientists are still trying to figure out exactly what makes this so much more contagious.
Speaking of how contagious the virus is, can you tell us more about how it's transmitted?
It would be good to look at how the structure of the virus under a microscope. It appears spherical. Its genome is right in the center, and it's surrounded by an oily membrane. And from the membrane, there is a crown of spikes protruding from it, which is why this group of viruses are known as the coronavirus, because it looks like a crown of spikes.
That was something that I read from your article, so that's why it's called corona, because of the crown on the virus. It's really interesting.
And it also helps the virus start to infect humans, because the spikes, they are known as S proteins. They are the ones that latch onto the human cell, and they do this via a lock and key approach. So once the virus S protein latch onto the human cell, it's able to inject its genetic material into the host cell, which is the human cell, and starts replicating.
Oh, okay.
So that is the first step of the infection. And now scientists and clinicians are still studying exactly how the disease progresses in every patient. And one big unknown is also why some patients develop severe disease and others do not.
So can we rewind a little bit and talk about when does the coronavirus invasion begin? Because you're talking about it attaching the lock and key approach and then it injects itself into the host cell. So we're talking about if you're walking down the street and somebody coughs and you inhale and then the virus is in, and that's, can you explain a little bit more about that to us?
So the World Health Organization says very clearly on its website that the main way this virus is transmitted now is through respiratory droplets. It's not really clear yet whether it is truly airborne or whether you can get it from the fecal oral route. So right now, what we know for sure is that the virus can spread through respiratory droplets, which is why actually personal hygiene and safe distancing measures are so important. Because outside of a human host, if you don't even let the virus start to enter your body, the virus is not even considered a living thing. It just simply exists. It cannot replicate. It doesn't need any resources. And this is why proper hygiene, like washing your hands with soap and water, will be able to get rid of the virus. You wash your hands, take adequate personal hygiene measures, and don't touch your face. The virus has no way of starting its invasion by letting off yourself.
And let's talk about the importance of that. I mean, everyone's looking for, you know, these alcohol-based hand sanitizers, but soap actually breaks down the fat around the virus. Is that correct? How does it work?
Yes, that's right. So for a virus to start infecting a person, its structure has to remain intact. So what hand sanitizers or washing your hands with soap and water does is that it breaks the structure and it renders the virus kind of impotent. So it cannot start its whole process of latching onto the human cell, replicating in a human cell, and releasing more virus particles in the human body. You're just stopping it at the root cause.
Audrey, it has been 5 months. I mean, it's almost half a year since we came to know of this virus. Can you tell us more about the kind of tools we have in our arsenal now to fight the virus?
Yes, so many scientists are looking into therapeutics, which is the branch of medicine that looks at how to treat or alleviate the symptoms of a particular disease. In this case, it would be COVID-19. And there are three main branches of therapeutics that are being studied now. So one would be antiviral medication. I think many of us would have heard about the remdesivir trial. So this was originally a drug developed to combat Ebola, but results have been promising because there was this major trial that showed improvement in patients who took remdesivir. So more studies are underway to discover other kinds of drugs that can be used to tackle COVID-19. Another potential therapeutic strategy would be antibody therapy. So antibodies are part of the human immune system. But what this therapy does is that there are antibodies that are manufactured in laboratories and then injected into the human body in hopes of stimulating a protective response. Lastly, vaccines. So this is the subject of huge international interest by research groups all around the world, including in Singapore. And obviously, this is because it has a preventive kind of effect, because you could inoculate people who don't have the virus now against having it in the future. And this involves injecting a non or less infectious strain of the virus into the patient, so the patient would be able to mount a natural protective response without actually being exposed to the risk of infection. But that one is still far.
Depending on who you ask or what you read, the timeline for a vaccine really varies. So what next? I mean, when do you think we can expect to see a vaccine?
Based on the scientists and researchers that I've interviewed, I think a vaccine that can be rolled out to people would take at least a year or maybe more. And the reason for that is you are injecting parts of a virus into a human body. You have to make sure that everything is super safe. You have to jump through lots of regulatory hoops in order to, you know, make sure that you are not exposing someone to actually getting infected by the virus. But in the shorter term, I think expecting drugs and possibly antibody therapies might be more promising. And we have seen some developments even in Singapore on this in these two areas.
What about the concept of herd immunity? Because that's something that's been discussed in quite a few countries across the globe as well.
Antibodies are present in a patient after an infection. But one big bone of contention is how long do these antibodies last and are they sufficient to actually confer immunity? So plenty of research is still going on in this area.
So what do you think is going to happen next then? Could we see the virus evolve further?
So in terms of mutations, viruses are prone to mutations, all viruses are, and this virus causing COVID is no exception. And our scientists are keeping a very close eye on these mutations to see if it could change the way the virus behaves or how easily it spreads. And right now, there's not enough evidence to show that it has mutated in a way that's making it more virulent or more dangerous. But this is an area that, you know, scientists are still actively looking at. And yeah, we just have to wait and see what the research shows.
So just as a last question, what's next, do you think, for treatment of the virus here in Singapore?
Currently, I think antiviral medication, repurposed drugs, seems to be the most promising. I mean, we have already seen it rolled out in other countries like in the US, and we might soon be able to see them here. Probably antibody therapy would be next, but vaccines would be probably a year from now or so.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time, Audrey.
No problem. Thanks, Rachel.
We've been speaking to Audrey Tan, science and environment correspondent at The Straits Times.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.